Some folks I used to know, used to smile and say hello, spin the world and turn the page, entertaining from the stage. But Father Time, forever true, loves its own, and me and you disappear just like the sun when the day is done. World is falling down.
Extraordinarily versatile, Abby Lincoln, also known as Aminata Moseka, with The World is Falling Down. This is from her 2007 album, her final album, Abby Lincoln Sings Abby. The vocalist, songwriter, actress, and civil rights activist's health deteriorated after having open heart surgery that year. She died, and at the age of 80. This is Lead Stories. I'm Retrice Lead, and you might be detecting a little bit of shortness of breath because I ran to my system here to connect with you. I had a package delivered, and I had to sign for it. Well, anyway, what's going on today, I think, should give us a sense of hope and pride and a really good feeling, because today, all over the country, high school students are staging a nationwide school walkout against gun violence, and we should salute them for their courage, for their compassion, and for their leadership. They are standing up for 17 students of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, who was savagely murdered in an assault rifle attack exactly a month ago on Valentine's Day. And they are demanding that the nation's political leadership enact legislation to ban the sale of military-grade weapons and strengthen gun ownership laws. What is startling about this is that even in a situation where you had a massacre occurring, we had all across the country a total failure of leadership. Nobody really enacted much to say that they recognize this as a problem. And they are sympathetic, and they really must. They have come to the conclusion this mass killing, bringing them to the realization that they must do something about gun violence. But really, we didn't see very much at all across the country. Despite the entreaties of students and administrators and teachers and parents and citizens of the country wanting this thing to stop? Why can't Congress do something about it? Why can't the individual states do something about it? And raising the age limit to buy an assault rifle is not the answer. That's not a solution, is it? But that is as far as these political leaders are prepared to go, because they don't have the spine, they don't have the guts to go up against not just the NRA, but the history of America, much of it so intertwined with guns and gun violence. And guns and gun violence in service of white supremacy in this country. I've remarked before about the wonderful Christian, very Christian folk coming from Britain, brought the Bible and their guns. And they knew exactly what they intended to do with both. Both were to be used as instruments of genocide, annihilation, and the expropriation of the land of the indigenous and First Nations people. And then they took it even further from there in continuing genocides. The gun is a very, very deep symbol in the United States. It stands for a mentality. It stands for a psychology. It stands for a psyche of oppression. And of course, with this notion of oppression comes the notion of power and rule. If we have to have some means, once we conquer the people who deserve to be conquered and install ourselves as the almighty leaders, we should expect at some point that they're not going to like being conquered, and they may just retaliate, in which case we have to be prepared. Hence, the notion of weapons and guns and cannon and whatever else they can use in the way of destroying the people they now would regard as the enemy. So it is, I hope, that part of the reporting today would be about the ability these young people organized themselves. They declared this action. They also organized another action which will take place later on to begin the process of directly challenging the political power structure. It is a remarkable moment. Today is a remarkable moment. They didn't go begging anybody to do anything. They didn't go soliciting people's help, because they already concluded that it wasn't there at the critical moment. And they're not interested anymore in just talk. They've decided that the 17 lives lost will be the last lives lost in a Holocaust at school. It's not supposed to happen ever again. And they're seeing to it. And they're honoring their students, their fellow students, with this action. You can't get better. You can't get better leadership than that. You can't get leadership more organic than that. And it shines a light on the rest of us, I think. In two shakes of a lamb's tail, they were able to organize a national effort. They don't have money. They don't have a lot of things that a national protest would require in our minds. They organized it. They took a leadership position. And not for themselves, but in behalf of others. This is remarkable. And they are following through. They are confronting the system head on. And they are showing the cowardice of politicians. They're showing the inadequacy of our political leadership. They're showing the outright contempt that politicians have and the organized legislators all over the country. They're not responding, even when 17 innocent people were just gunned down at school. What a bizarre state of affairs. But these young people have stepped up. And I wish we can find a way to just salute them, send some good thoughts their way. And we should find another way to connect with them as they proceed, as they take their struggle even further. They need us to stand with them. And we need to stand with them. You know, it's not so much that they need us, it's that we really do need them for showing this level of leadership, for this level of courage, and for their tenacity. They are marching ahead, knowing that they're up against intransigent state and national legislatures that are prepared only to talk but not do very much. And yet they are struggling for the whole country on this question that has gone unresolved these many years. And there appears to be no end in sight for the dilly-dallying and the shuffling and the, you know, trying to fend off the burning question, what is the government going to do? What are state governments and local governments and the national government all going to do about this question, about so many lethal military grade weapons getting in the hands of people who simply shouldn't have them? And we should be now discussing, should there be a ban on the manufacturing of such weapons? It's not just that people are afraid of weapons getting into the wrong hands. The question is, why do we need these weapons circulating at all? Why does anybody need an assault weapon, which is designed for one purpose? It's designed to kill, and to kill as many people as possible. It is amazing how people just can't see the light, or they just won't see the light. And it takes young people reacting specifically to the trauma of 17 of their fellow students being cut down with an assault rifle in the hands of a mentally deranged individual who, by the way, was warned about it's emerged after the shooting that the authorities, local authorities, and even the school authorities were alerted to the fact that the young man who killed the 17 had been pegged by his fellow students as being somebody who needed to be watched and who was likely to do something of this nature, and he did it. But there are so many Nicholas Cruises all over the country, and they keep telling us about the Second Amendment, their Second Amendment rights. They have the right to bear arms, and making all these silly arguments. Because, of course, they are intentionally ignorant. The Second Amendment does not have implications here because it was written and it applied to a period in U.S. history where the thought was that the people needed to be armed in the event of a slave rebellion or other civil disorder in which the authorities would be very short-handed. And so in that event, the citizens would be able to pick up the slack and protect themselves. But that amendment was framed against that backdrop, which does not exist today. But we have people, of course, deeply psychologically rooted to the notion of the gun, the symbolism of the gun, the meaning of the gun, the superiority, the sense of superiority and supremacy that a gun gives to people who have other psychological issues working in their heads. And this climate, to be very honest about it, has refed these fears. The fear that the others will take over, or they would be at the mercy of the others. So they are psychologically preparing themselves for what they see as an ultimate clash, open warfare, domestic warfare. It's a very deep thing. We know that. But these students have exposed categorically the inadequacy of government, governments at each level, national, state, and local, having no answers and unwilling to even try to have some answers about how you regulate a society in which a whole bunch of people are likely to own these kinds of weapons and may not be psychologically sound when they use them. So hats off to these students, and let us keep them in our best thoughts. Let us let them know how proud we are that they're standing up today, and let us take heed. The adults who always wag the finger about what are young people doing? Well, this is what they're doing. What are the grown-ups doing? What are they organizing to do? What legislation are they organizing to get passed? So they've showed up as well, the adults in the business of politics, saying, you know, enough of the flim-flamming. We are taking this on, and we will create some changes. All this time we shuffling and and we're wondering what would Bernie do, what will Hillary win. No. The actions of these students today just blows wide open the myth that it takes time to get things done. It takes a process. It takes money. None of these things matter today. And what is causing this today is a group of people all across the country organizing themselves, putting forward an agenda themselves. And it's not for them. It is for the country. And it is shameful, really, that people who should be concentrating on passing their biology tests and their math tests and looking forward to researching colleges they want to go to are now wrestling with this idea of active, bold, active citizenship. This is what citizens would do when they understand that the power equation is way too lopsided now. And people, we the people, are suffering. They have put an end to all of that. They've blown these myths and arguments to smithereens as of today. I am so proud of them, as we all should be. Very, very proud of them. And we should be thankful to them that they have, by their actions, they have emboldened us to not feel so scared anymore about taking action in matters that concern us directly. So once again, hats off to them. I very much support them. And I hope that the nation is paying attention today to their actions. Well, President Donald Trump's latest round of cabinet musical chairs is yet another warning about his mental acuity and fitness for the nation's most important job. At least you would think that. But you would think that people recognize that. But it doesn't seem so. He and his administration instead are selling or marketing his psychotic spasms as a genius mind at work that cannot and should not be contained. The mastermind has already announced his new obsession, which is militarizing space because he wants to prepare for space war. Now, the statement and the pronouncement is bad enough. I'm going back to the idea that in the middle of all of this chaos, all right, no one in the media, you could see very few, I shouldn't say no one, you don't see many people discussing what is so blatantly clear. He's off his rocker. He is deeply psychologically debilitated. I'm being nice, I'm using fancy words. The trouble is that people refuse to recognize it. And we can't seem to get any way of forcing the issue that the president's mental health is and should be a major concern right about now. Well, people said, you know, when it started out, and remember, from the beginning, I warned folks I sent up the red flags. Something is wrong with this man. Professionals need to get to it quickly. And certainly Congress needs to get to it quickly. You cannot have a country being thrust in such disarray by the very person who is a supposed captain of the ship. Just about every sector of our lives as a nation has been negatively affected by Donald Trump. And you look at the cabinet shuffling while he's taking this one here and he's putting that one there. And, you know, he names the people. He goes after them. He chases them down. And he somehow brings them in, convinces them to come in to his cabinet. And then the minute they're there, begins a program of public shaming, of open criticism, I mean, of the vilest sort, and the destruction of careers that people, whatever you wish to think about them, they walked in the door with substantial credentials. Rex Tillerson, whatever we think about him, he was courted, he was romanced, he was asked to come on board as the former CEO of Exxon Mobil. Well, that's not an incidental piece of information there. He came in credentialed. Now, the president decided, and I have to blame also Tillerson for allowing himself to be misused. Diplomacy is not what he's cut out to do. He had no training there. But it's the mindset. He reflected the mindset of the person who brought him on board. There's nothing we can't do. We've got money. We've got power. There's nothing we can't do. So you come on and be Secretary of State. And as is Trump's signature move, within a short time, there was a war. There's a war between Trump and his appointee. The same with Jeff Sessions. You know, and you're seeing it multiply itself, which tells you this person is not of sound mind. And it is duplicating the way Trump ran his own businesses, which went bankrupt 9 times. And just 2 weeks ago, he lost the right to put his name on a property in Panama because his business partners were granted the right to sever the relationship with Trump because they claimed he was killing their business. He was death to the business. He had no idea what he was doing. And they almost approached the point of bankruptcy. So he brings this kind of chaos and this kind of a tawdry record. And we're not going to discuss the personal part of it, which is a whole other story. But the man comes to the job with many, many defects. And he conducts himself in a manner that should scare anybody, like a petulant child who must have his way. The outbursts, the mood swings, the unpredictable behavior. The embarrassing behavior. And the obsession with himself, because narcissism, constantly telling people how brilliant he is, how smart, and how great he is, the greatest president ever, ever. All of it, to any sane mind, would send off a lot of alarms that this man is in need of serious psychiatric help. But in the meantime, he's busy planning at some point to begin a program to militarize space. And people are just observing him. And nobody seems to have the tools to compel a process to occur by which Trump is evaluated psychiatrically for fitness to occupy the White House. It is amazing. All over the world, he's, you know, beginning to, if you notice, in the world community of nations, the United States and Donald Trump, and put it the other way, Donald Trump and the United States have taken on a certain stench. The country is not respected because the commander-in-chief is not respected. On practically any grounds that you want to engage in a study of Donald Trump, you come up with the fact that there are way more negatives than positives to this man. A pathological liar, a deceiver, averse, seriously averse to the truth, and someone you can't trust. I mean, here's Tillerson. I wondered what was going on in his head when he gets a call from Air Force One telling him he's done. Who does that? Who operates that way? Tacky and, you know, mean to the point of being just hateful all the time. And privately relishing the idea that he could now be in a position to tell the former CEO of ExxonMobil, you're fired. A petty, petty mind, but it's a dangerous mind. And it is taking us downhill. Every day we go further and further downhill. And we don't seem to have any way, because even psychiatrists, professional psychiatrists and psychologists, I shared this stuff with you, have written. They've written essays, they've written papers, they've written formal pleas, trying to shake this nation, I should say, to shake members of Congress, to shake them up about what is going on in the White House mentally and why it should constitute an urgency that they pay attention to this stuff. But we just keep going along while Trump carries on as if, you know, the country is his personal possession. He could do with it whatever he wishes. Nobody could stop him because he's almighty. He's the smartest guy. So if we have any sense at all, we just give him as much rope as he would take and let him do his thing. Because in the end, he will make America great again. But we've all fallen into line with this business of non-interference. And we don't seem to know what the answer is. We don't seem to know what the next move should be and who should make it. Who should make the call? Nobody wants to make it. I don't know. I'll stop here for a moment, take a break, come back to your calls and comments right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're taking calls at 888-874-4888. While you call in, let me remind you about this program, this health program that Gary is headlining in Mineola, Texas, in the month of April, two different sessions. One from April 8th to the 14th, one from April 15th to the 21st. And it is about getting back your health, taking charge of your health, and learning new ways in which to do that, to empower yourself. If you are interested, please call Luann Panessi at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. It would be really great to hear that Lead Stories listeners are signing up and placing a premium on their health. It's really important, as you know. I'm not kidding. 888-874-4888. What do you think about the students' actions today? And what do you think about the apparent inability? We're stuck with Donald Trump, and we can't do anything, it seems. We can't force a psychiatric exam. We can't do anything but just wait and see what happens. I don't know. All I know is that we are in a very serious, serious situation. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you had a wonderful trip to New York, and hope you share what you spoke about there with us on a show sometime. Also wanted to thank you for... In the beginning of the year with the show with Alton Maddox, fantastic. I could listen to you guys for hours. I kept looking at the clock saying it's already half over, and I was just so enjoying it so much.
I look forward to having him on again. He's trying to take care of some things right now. As soon as he frees up his time, we'll arrange.
Thank you. Now, the situation that we're in with this Donald Trump. I mean, he might be insane, but I think that's what the system wants us to think, and they want us to focus all our attention on him. I think he's just a puppet, and he does what he's told to do. Just like they gave him this TV show for 12 years called The Apprentice, where he was the boss, and he would hire six or eight people, and he told them what he wanted them to do. And then if they didn't do what he said, then he said, "You're fired." And this is just, he's just carrying on. So he had 12 years of experience. He went to the wrestling matches. He probably owned part of the World Wrestling Federation. And he's in the ring with Vince McMahon, getting all the crowd crazy. And these are all his supporters. Now, who's insane, him or the people that support him? You know, maybe the people that support him are the ones that are insane, and maybe they're the majority of this crazy, racist country that we're stuck in right now. You know, you could go, I moved out of Florida. What do people care about? their lawns. They spend all their time cutting the grass. You got generators going, leaf blowers going, chainsaws going. I never heard so much noise in my life. This is ridiculous the way this world has turned into. And then these shootings, are they real or are they staged? I hear a lot of evidence. I see a lot of evidence that most of these things are staged. They even put ads in the paper for.
No. We shouldn't be thinking these things are staged. 17 students being killed. There's not even, I can't even find the words to say about people thinking these things are staged. They're not. They're very real. And we should deal with the reality that confronts us. The reality of Donald Trump as president and the reality of a society that is in free fall. Because the mechanisms that we used to look to for, you know, some semblance of control and some semblance of stasis and so forth no longer are working. And we see more and more the corruption, the just the ineptitude of people in office. And what they're doing has nothing to do with the welfare of the country and the people at heart. They don't, you know, it's a very bad situation.
Well,
you don't need to compound it by thinking that people are staging these things. Not at all. Thanks for calling in today and getting us started. I'm sorry? Oh, okay, we lost you. Patricia from New York, you're on the air. It was good to see you, Sunday.
It was wonderful also to see you, Trace. You look absolutely marvelous.
And I dressed in a hurry.
Well, it didn't. So you were well put together, sister.
You know, I laugh at that because I was going to go. I was about to go to an interview. And I got myself all decked out and everything else. I mean, I really was. I really looked fantastic that day. And as I crossed Madison Avenue, a sanitation truck driver said, "Damn, sister, you're looking all right." And I said, "You know what? I got dressed in a hurry." And I laughed and laughed. It was great. I stopped traffic. That's one thing. On that day, I was looking really good.
Okay, I'm going to read two sentences from today's Crane. Today, they must have known the topic that you were going to be addressing today. It says, "Why the financial community shrugs off Trump drama. The financial community doesn't seem to care about Donald Trump's actions or about the revolving door of top White House aides because the economy remains strong. Even the recent exit of Gary Cohn, Trump's chief economic advisor, didn't shift perception. In turn, the economy's strength is buoying the stock market." And that's the answer. Nobody cares as long as that 0.01% of the population is making hands over foot money. The minute the stock market crumbles, then everybody's going to start taking a closer evaluation of Donald Trump. But as long as they keep making money, nobody cares.
But you know what? That caring is going to happen pretty soon.
Oh, yes.
Because while Wall Street might be happy, or many in Wall Street might be happy, if you keep reading the economic reports and the economic forecasts, there's a great deal of worry about where the nation is going. In Miami, for example, I read just yesterday a record number of restaurants are closing. Nationwide, we see these giants who are shutting down many of their outlets across the country. And big businesses are beginning to pull out from you know, their strongholds because they want to cut costs and so forth. So there's a lot of turmoil in the market. For a select section of the market, yes, it's doing very well. But how long would it continue? For them, it's doing well, very well, but not for the vast majority of people. People are still having such a rough time making ends meet. Costs are going up, up, up. The value that you're getting for the money you're spending is going down. But look at the national chains. They're closing. JCPenney is closing. Kmart has closed several of its outlets across the country. Sears closing a lot of their, in fact, I think they're probably going out of business very soon, totally. So we're seeing that happening. Yes, people in other sectors of the economy are having a ball. But in the standard retail industries and so forth, they're having a rough time.
I was reading an article yesterday about the labor market, and especially here in New York, and I suspect that this is mirrored across the country, the major labor gains have been in low-wage industries. And so when they talk about the number of jobs and the low unemployment rate, what you're talking about are people who are in low-wage industries, literally, not even, you know, there used to be the old adage that you live from paycheck to paycheck. That is not even true anymore. People are doubling up on these low-wage jobs just to make one paycheck that they used to make before. So I absolutely agree with you. There is no comprehension, and it's worldwide. It's not even just here. When you look at places like Italy and France, it's worldwide. So, you know, and because the economies are so intertwined, the global economies are so intertwined, it does not bode well for not
well,
just...
the biggest hint that I've seen in the last couple of days about how the economy is changing is that there is now a fight developing between Walmart and Amazon for business from lower income people,
mm-hmm.
for home delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, so in other words, first they make you poor. So the economy makes a lot of people poor. And then once they get to that level, the big guys see an opportunity to get a monopoly on delivering food and other items to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, mm-hmm. I mean,
it's sick.
Only
in
the U.S. It is very sick. I don't get it.
It's sick.
Thanks, Patricia. Great to hear from you. And once more, great to see you. You look fantastic.
Thank you.
All righty. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrees. Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to, first of all, tell you that my nervous breakdown that I talked about the other day spiked again yesterday when I found out at 6 o'clock that Rex Tillerson had just left and that they were hiring the Nazi queen, queen of the camps, to take over the CIA.
The torture camp.
Very scary. Very, very scary. But I also wanted to make a comment about this job situation, because what I think, I was telling somebody yesterday that I believe they're pushing these stores out of business because the corporations know that they can make so much more money selling it online because you don't have to pay the employees. I don't really think that the stores are emptying out the way people say. I don't think there's a mad dash to go to their computer. If you're a normal woman, for me, if I take 20 outfits into the dressing room, maybe one fits. So I've never bought anything to wear online because I need to see what it looks like before I buy it. So it seems like I think it's exaggerated that people are all flocking away from retail. I think retail wants to shutter these businesses to make more money at the top, and they're obliterating these towns. And we can see, you know, yet more devastation from NAFTA and GATT, because when the economy changed, everything went into a service retail, which is a very precarious kind of economy to have. It's a very, very fine line you walk when you don't have an industrialized nation anymore. So more and more, as you know, we see people going into retail food. And by the way, probably that's why our country is so fat, is because food is a huge business. It's much, much bigger business than it was when I was growing up. I mean, you didn't go out for dinner every night, and you sure don't have this many restaurants. So this is the way we've replaced these, you know, industrial jobs. We've replaced them with retail. But I do think that I wouldn't listen to everything they tell you on the TV about people not wanting to shop in department stores or anymore. I just think that the rents are getting too high. I guess you might know about Manhattan that, you know, there's so many businesses have closed down because the rents are so obscene. I mean, pretty soon all we're really going to have here are, if you want to come here, we're going to have really, really expensive apartments, and you can walk around the city, and that's what you can do. Oh, and you can eat. But as far as, like, retail, there's just not that, not as much, I won't, there's not as much diversity as there used to be. There's not as many places to shop, not too many interesting things, and it just gets kind of blander and blander as we jack these rents up. So that's kind of my thoughts about the economy. And I just, like I told you the other day, it's like you got to hang on to your chair when, when you're dealing with Trump. Who would have thought that yesterday morning, you know, when I left my house and went out for the day, I came home, and like, remember I told you about the other day? It's like, you're like, if you don't watch TV,
you always have to check in every 15 minutes.
You have, exactly.
Disaster has happened.
I have my mom planted in Cape May. She's 91 years old. Never planted in front of that TV, but she did not call me with an update yesterday. She forgot. But she hates, my mother is alive because she hates Trump so much that she starts to come back to life at night when she watches her three shows. And by the end of the night, she's raring to go. This is a woman with a clogged window banker and all kinds of issues with her heart. But when she sees him, and she says terrible things about him, I keep telling her, I said, Ma, everybody's listening to these telephone calls. You cannot say you want to blow up the president on the telephone. I don't care. She's 91.
Don't you feel a little bit anxious? I mean, before we just kind of inoculated ourselves, but don't you feel a sense of anxiety about where things
yes.
are and
Seriously?
Where they're likely
yes.
to go?
Mm-hmm. I feel it because the other day he came out and said, I mean, every time he says something, it's so I'm utterly shocking. He said that he wants to start killing drug dealers. He thinks they're doing a great job in the Philippines. And then he hires this woman for the CIA who apparently has bloodlust. I mean, she gets a kick out of watching people get tortured. So, I mean, I think we're the deer in the headlights. I mean, we really have never seen this before. And I hear people that are on the left that are starting to sound like they're on the right, you know, like with, I heard a woman on Gary Noll talking about women's rights yesterday, but said that she was okay with people having, you know, technology that could read their minds. And if you had a bad thought in your head, you should get put in jail for that. I mean, it's crazy. Everything is so turned upside down. And I think that what we all need to remember is history does repeat itself, that Trump might be foreign to us, but he's not foreign to everyone. This kind of man, I think it's very, very scary, very, very dangerous. And I think that it's unbelievable that the people in Congress are like somebody put Novocaine in all their brains. They don't feel it. They don't know what to do. I mean, they're worse than us because they're supposed to be able to take some kind of an action. But all they do is back away like sheep. And, you know, they're terrified of him. And it's not enough.
Something is numbing all our minds because we're not seeing very much action in or attention directed where we think it ought to be directed. So we are tense. We don't know who is going to do what about the situation. But we do know that
right.
the situation is getting worse and worse and worse. Thanks, Gwen, for calling in today.
Thank you,
and that
Chief.
Brings
Bye-bye.
Us to the end of our program. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Global Alert News. It's a new program, but you ought to get a lot out of it. You can reach me via email at leadstories@gmail.com. And I thank you for tuning in today and contributing. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.